Today's January 27th, 2025. Current Bitcoin price is $101,678.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
What a roller coaster today, huh, Rich?
I'll say. Well, I don't know. It's not as bad as it used to be, but you did call it last week. You said, you know, we were forming kind of that upside-down triangle pattern or maybe a diamond pattern, and then it was going to break one way or the other on Monday.
Yeah.
And definitely broke down.
Well, and it's, you know, we were kind of talking about this before we got going tonight, and it's one of those things where part of me is like, well, of course we broke down. Like, I mean, if you're sitting there and you're like, you heard all this news, you know, about the SAB 121 being rescinded, Trump signing that executive order, like nothing but positive stuff that would cause like what you would think would be a huge explosion in the space, right? So if you're sitting there on the sidelines, you're like, I'm going to go long and make a killing, right? Nobody wants to short Bitcoin in a bull market. So then you go long, and then we do the
exact leveraged.
Yep.
Then you get crushed.
You get crushed. And I wonder how much of this liquidation that we had, like, because you saw crazy cascades happen. How much of that was that, you know, those over-leveraged longs just sitting there like, we're going to the moon, baby. We're going to the moon. They were looking at the same pattern that we were, right? And they were just, they had the gut instinct that it was going to go up, not down.
I tell you what, we keep warning people not to leverage themselves in Bitcoin. Just have your Bitcoin and ride it out.
Yeah.
But the people who leverage themselves, you know, as soon as the, you know, Bitcoin is a roller coaster, it has its ups and downs, even in the bull market. And you will get torn apart if you don't watch it. If you time it wrong, game over.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a game, like I say, I get it, right? Like, who wants to short Bitcoin in a bull market? But the moment you think you've got a surefire thing, that's when it's not going to be the surefire thing.
For sure.
I mean, even Michael Saylor, he can't buy the bottoms.
No. Nope.
But he just knows he buys whenever.
He's just that confident. He knows he's going to be in it for the long term, and in another 4 years, he's going to be sitting pretty.
I think he just bought like another $10 billion today or something like that.
It's crazy.
That guy is nuts. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love him for it, but I'm like, dude, you just keep on going to that ATM machine and just give me the cash.
Give me the cash. Let's tank my stock prices for a second. All right.
All right. All right. All right. So how are our theoreticals looking today after this crazy turmoil?
That's not too bad. I mean, it would have looked a lot worse at 97, which they kind of touched today.
Yeah.
But now at 101,686, the $3,000 back in October 2023, it would have netted you 0.0885 Bitcoin or 8.85 million Satoshis. And that is sitting right at 8,999. So almost tripled, just $1 short of tripled your value in that time frame, so still pretty good.
Yeah.
And second theoretical purchase back at the halving, say April 19th. If you would have put $1,000 in, you would have only been able to buy you still would have got 1.564 million Satoshis or 0.01564. And that today is worth $1,590. So still sitting on $590 of profit.
Yeah, and so for those that aren't exactly sure of what we're talking about here, we did some theoretical buys. I think the first one was in October of 23, right?
Right, yeah.
And then we did one $1,000 at the halving. And last episode was kind of our high, I think. We had 91.49 for the 3,000 and then 16.17 for the $1,000 purchase.
Yeah.
So... yeah, and then we looked at the flows. We talked about it. We recorded last on the 23rd. We were kind of curious, you know, as to what iBit had done that day. We're expecting, I think I was expecting a higher number that day. They still did 154 million in inflows that day. And then we saw, you know, on that Friday, 155 million was purchased. So, I mean, when you look at the, you know, right now on the ETF flow chart, everything was looking pretty solid. I'm going to be really curious to see what these numbers look like tomorrow because we don't have a lot of the data. We had 164 million so far of what's been reported in outflows off the ETF. So, yeah, some major swings that took on there.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. Definitely more heavy on the negative side, but remains to be seen.
Yeah. So what's your take on what all has happened today?
I mean, well, actually, can you give a brief explanation of what happened, what spooked the markets?
Yeah. So, and you're going to have to correct me on this because I don't have the name of it, but is it DeepSeek?
Yes, DeepSeek.
DeepSeek. So basically, multiple factors affected the cryptocurrency space today. A significant factor is the announcement by a Chinese firm of an open source AI model to rival ChatGPT, causing market jitters. Additionally, expectations that the Federal Reserve will maintain higher interest rates for longer have also contributed to the downturn. Despite the recent drop, some cryptocurrencies like XRP and Solana have seen substantial gains this year, driven by optimism surrounding the market. So basically, I mean, what we're looking at here is that the United States has kind of bet a lot on AI. We saw that with kind of Donald Trump's executive orders and then his big press conference with Larry Ellison and Sam Altman talking about, you know, their AI endeavors and how they were going to bring all this money to the United States to, you know, develop more of our AI capabilities. And you've got this little, and you did a good job of prefacing this whenever we were kind of discussing before we recorded. You've got this Chinese firm that did it for a fraction of the cost. I think they were saying their model runs about 96% cheaper than OpenAI's. It's not quite as advanced, but, you know, they have fewer chips and all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. They're just saying that it's probably comparable to, I think it was like ChatGPT 1.0, if that was a thing, is kind of where this thing is at. So it's not as advanced as OpenAI's most recent models. But it caused a lot of spook in the market because, you know, the new United States investors are wondering how much are we just overinflating the price of these companies?
Yep.
You know,
especially
like
Nvidia.
Yeah. Nvidia was huge. Like they had a split stock split this year because I think they were up to almost $1,000 a share. It was like 800 something. Forgive me. I'm not exactly on the mark on it, but they did a stock split. And I think right now you can get them for, well, shoot, today I think you can get it for like 130 bucks or something like that, or 120 after the market tanked. But it was at like 147 again. And you brought it up too, like, it's those companies that are doing this stuff with AI right now. They are bolstering up most of the economy, right?
Yeah. Well, especially just NVIDIA. I mean, they are really carrying the whole U.S. stock market on their back.
Yeah.
I mean, the only better investment you could have made since, you know, October 2023, than Bitcoin, is in NVIDIA.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been killing it with all the AI stuff. You know, they have the best chips. And that's kind of what spooked everyone out is, you know, this company. And allegedly, you know, they're not using NVIDIA chips. Technically, it's illegal to own NVIDIA stuff in China, I believe. And so they're using something else. And they came up with something pretty good for very, very cheap.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone's freaking out about. And I've heard different things. I saw something where Meta, Mark Zuckerberg at Meta / Facebook was holding a war room with all these, their top people, seeing how they could have possibly done this. So for whatever reason, I mean, people are really believing it. And that's the thing that maybe makes me different is I take everything that, every bit of news that comes out of China, I take with a grain of salt.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I know we've talked about that on this podcast, is that you can't trust a lot of what comes out of China most of the time.
Go ahead. I mean, you can't even audit them financially. So who knows? When they're saying they only spent so much money on it, I mean, what kind of shady accounting practices are they doing? Mm-hmm. We'll never find out.
Yeah, we'll never know. They are. And I mean, of course, it makes them look better to come out with something like this, and it's cheaper, right? And then we've talked about this with fake cities. We've talked, you know, we had the same kind of discussion too when the Ukraine crisis kind of popped off with Russia. That we don't even know exactly how good the Russian ruble's doing. You know, we don't get a lot of that reporting, especially once, you know, sanctions are in place or there's any type of political aggression going on between countries. Looking at China, I do not, unless they outright stole something from OpenAI. I mean, is it possible they developed their own AI? For sure, but I don't know. I don't know exactly what their costs were. I don't know what kind of chips they're actually running on.
And we don't know the quality of it.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I understand, you can download that AI currently. I haven't messed with it, and I probably won't. But it's supposed to be, like I said, it's supposed to be fractions, pennies to the dollar, basically, compared to what we're seeing with OpenAI stuff.
Yeah.
When they charge per token. So one of the interesting things about AI is that you actually get a token set is how many words or characters you can actually use. And it's like a grouping of three letters composes a single token typically within AI. So, you know, that's why you're always limited as to how many words you can put into any of the GPTs that are out there, any of the chatbots. Because there's a certain amount of processing that's required per token per dollar transaction, whatever the case may be. And there's usually, unless you're paying for something, you don't get a whole lot of extra tokens to be able to play with. From what I understand, that DeepSeek can't do stable diffusion, which is the way that they render images, and it can't speak the way that some of the AI does, where it's really kind of naturally speaking. But it's supposed to be still fairly impressive. And it's censored too, from what I understand. It, like, if you ask it about Taiwan and stuff like that, it won't come straight forward with an answer. It'll try and re-steer the conversation to something else.
Sounds about right for China.
Yeah.
Granted, our AIs are somewhat self-censored outside of Grok.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And that one's probably still somewhat censored, just less restricted.
Right. There's definitely bias in the machines, right?
Right. And if they're not biased, they're woke, like Gemini.
Yeah. And what does it have to do with Bitcoin? Nothing, other than Bitcoin is tech.
Well, and I mean, whatever we want to say, Bitcoin's price right now is somewhat tied to the market. And if the market tanks, the price of Bitcoin's going to tank too.
Yeah.
And like I said, if it really hit NVIDIA that hard, I mean, it's going to affect the entire stock market because they're the ones who are carrying it. Otherwise, it's been pretty meh growth across the board and all the stocks.
And I'm going to pull that up real quick. I know we didn't talk about that before, but what is, I want to see what they did today. I know it was turmoil for NVIDIA. They took the hardest hit, I think. Yeah, they're down to $118.42. They were at 142. So for the traditional stock market, that's a major drop, right? They're down basically 18% in the last week, which isn't normal for traditional stock market items. But, you know, yeah, I think Bitcoin kind of went along for the ride. And I think there was a series of events there. We probably had, like we talked about before, a lot of open long leverage positions. And then this news came out and just people trying to, well, I mean, you probably had people scalping, seeing the longs and yeah. Kind of crazy. The other thing, and we talked about it last episode as well, was whether or not Ripple is actually politicking in the background, trying to do some lobbying with Trump's administration on getting XRP in the strategic reserve. We kind of touched on that. We had even mentioned, I think, that if, you know, if Ripple makes its way in there, like even if they come out with a US dollar based on Ripple or XRP, that's still a CBDC.
Right. Or that could be the pathway to a CBDC.
Right. Even though, you know, Trump outright said that he doesn't want one, it's supposed to be banned in the executive order. Just Ripple, like, it's such a weird case with them because we talked about them. Their SEC win was huge and it was good for the industry. But at the same time, I don't trust them.
No. Well, everything's pre-mined and they basically own everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the beauty of Bitcoin is it's totally decentralized. Nobody's in control of it. And if you bought into Ripple and they decide to change their mind one day, they can do that. And what say do you have over that?
None.
None. Whereas with Bitcoin, if there's somebody who comes up with some type of idea and they want to split with Bitcoin, then it can fork. And usually those forks do not turn out well for anybody going off that because they usually flounder and the traditional Bitcoin keeps going and growing.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw that there was a lot during the block size wars. I mean, that's where Bitcoin Cash came from. And then, you know, what I haven't heard in a long time is Bitcoin Cash, Satoshi's vision. I haven't heard anything about that in a long time. But if you want to see a little bit more about some of the concern with Ripple and what's going on with the United States government and Trump's administration, Jack Mahler's released a really good video, and I think you can find it on X, discussing kind of what he's seeing behind the scenes with Ripple. So, I mean, take it with a grain of salt, whatever, but at least kind of be informed, at least hear it out. It's a very interesting take. So,
yeah. And he's a very big-time Bitcoin maximalist, and we kind of fall in that camp as well. We're pretty much pro-Bitcoin, and we're not as interested in anything else.
Yeah. I mean, when we look at Bitcoin, we look at Bitcoin for the freedom that it offers. And I was going to wait and plug this at the end, but I think now might be a good time too. We look at the freedom that it offers. We look at the fact that it's decentralized. It's unbiased. You know, it's censorship resistant. Anybody in the world can use it. It doesn't care who you are. It doesn't care what the Fed decides to do that day. It doesn't care what the CEO needs to make for their quarterly report. It doesn't care. Bitcoin does what Bitcoin does, whether without, as long as computers are working and the internet's working, and as long as people are using it, Bitcoin continues. So one of the things that I kind of wanted to bring up, and I was going to bring it up at the end, but I think now's kind of a good time as well. I really want to encourage people that may be listening to get some sort of a home mining operation. Not that you need to spend a lot of money on a mining rig, because we were kind of talking beforehand. We bought a couple miners, right?
Yes.
We were kind of playing with an idea of starting like a mining company at one point. And we bought a couple miners just to kind of get our feet wet and try and figure out the market. And they're older miners, right? But they only produce about 9 terahash. And you can buy a miner now for about $250 that'll produce 6 terahash and doesn't sound like a banshee screaming in your house.
Or pull like 1500 watts.
Yeah. The efficiency has gotten so much better than what it was in the past. And the reason why I say that is if, you know, as these companies kind of continue to grow and they get publicly traded and they're mining like Marathon, and I own Marathon, don't get me wrong. I bought some shares of Marathon, but you're going to get centralized mining. And I would really encourage, if you have a little bit of extra money and you're not immediately just going to buy Bitcoin with it, go ahead and get yourself a mining rig, a small one. It doesn't need to be anything crazy. But I think if enough people do that, then you have enough of a backup of a decentralized group of the Cyber Hornets that can continue the chain running no matter what.
Yep.
Because if BlackRock gets nefarious or whatever the case may be, and they have all these centralized miners that are all theirs, they can change the code and kind of take Bitcoin in their own direction. But you know what? If all the miners agree that, you know what? No, this is the Bitcoin we're running with still, then this chain will continue.
Exactly. Well, and that's kind of what we're talking about with the splitting Bitcoin. And that's my biggest fear with BlackRock is that they will split it.
Yeah.
And change the code or change their thing. And then all the miners that they own and all the Bitcoin that they have, they're going to just take it. And maybe they'll dump the traditional Bitcoin and try and put everything back into theirs. I mean, I really don't trust them. I mean, it's been kind of interesting, sometimes exciting watching it, but it's at the same time, it's very scary to me.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about it on the podcast too. Like, it is in their paperwork that, you know, they will decide what code or what chain or fork of Bitcoin is the one that they will determine is Bitcoin.
Right.
Obviously, we're still running the code that I believe is the chain, the Bitcoin, but, you know, that could change. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. And if that does happen, I mean, at least there's enough hash power to keep the Bitcoin network going, or at least the Bitcoin network as we know it going. So... yeah, that's my own little personal plug. I'm like, you know, if you're a Bitcoin maximalist, just get yourself a little rig. Run a node. Those don't cost a whole lot. You can get combo units that run a node and a little miner together. You know, run like 8 terahashes of mining and run a node. I mean, then you're really contributing to the network and you can secure your own transactions that way. So I didn't want to go on too much of a tangent of that, but I think there are some, like, there's a nerd miner. It's not going to contribute a whole lot, but you can get a nerd miner for like $50. You can get a BitAx for like $110. And you know, the BitAx actually, it's actually found blocks. Like if you mine solo, those things have found blocks on their own.
That's pretty crazy.
Isn't that nuts, dude? Last time it happened, and it happened just in July. This last year was the last time that somebody got solo mining with a little BitAx. Can you imagine that, dude? You wake up and you're like, dude, I got 3.125 Bitcoin plus all the transaction fees for that transaction. So.
No, that'd be a good day. That one day that person could retire on that little transaction right there.
Yeah. No, it's nuts.
Yeah.
You won the lottery, basically, is what happened that day.
Yep.
So, yeah. One other thing, and we didn't talk about this before, but I did want to bring it up. BlackRock actually did file to change their Bitcoin redemptions for their IBIT to in-kind. So it'll be the same one. Like, you can redeem your IBIT shares for Bitcoin now. Or there's applying to be able to do that.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd heard about that or not.
I hadn't.
It came out on Friday, right after we had talked about the SEB 121 being rescinded. They bought that about, and I'm like, that is really cool.
So, no, that's actually a very good sign, in my opinion.
Mine too. Yeah.
Especially the fact that you were only allowed to redeem it in cash. I mean, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good,
in my
opinion, because cash is a sinking ship long term.
Absolutely. So, last thing that we wanted to bring up, and I know we're going longer probably than what we planned, but last thing we wanted to bring up is Eric Trump had posted that U.S.-based crypto projects are likely going to see zero capital gains taxes, which would benefit like XRP and HBAR. That's huge news if that's the case.
Yeah. If that does go into effect, the XRP will be the biggest benefactor, I think.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and I kind of posed that question to you before, too. Like, where would Bitcoin land in that camp?
If they're smart, they'd put that in the list as well.
Could you imagine that? You think they would let that happen?
Well, I mean, they've talked about, I mean, in part of Trump's pitches at the Libertarian Convention and the Bitcoin Convention that he gave speeches on, we talked about Bitcoin. He did say he was talking about removing capital gains. I think he talked about that at least at one of them. And he did talk about eliminating central bank digital currencies and freeing Ross Ulbricht. So, I mean, that would be awesome.
Yeah. No, that's truly incredible.
And he also did state that he wants the U.S. to be the number one Bitcoin
Well, the head of cryptocurrency, but and the head of Bitcoin. So if he's going to make that happen, that's one step to make it happen.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, because how many projects would be like, well, screw it, we're going to the U.S. if they're not, you know, if it's zero capital gains. Exactly. It's a huge win.
It'd probably be a ton.
Yeah. Huge win. You know, and the other thing too that I think Michael Saylor brought up kind of an interesting point with SAB 121, which is kind of a catch 22. And just to kind of reiterate what the SAB 121 was, it did not allow banks to basically bankroll or store Bitcoin or crypto in general, right?
Right.
With SAB 121 rescinded, that allows, in a sense, capital controls again. Because then your money won't be leaving your country. You'll be putting it into the bank. For a lot of people, I'm not saying everybody.
Well, I can see how that would be seen as capital controls, but it's not by force yet.
Yeah, and you're right. It's absolutely not by force because Trump's executive order did protect the right to self-custody and not having to use a third-party intermediary or anything like that. But, I mean, for a lot of people, they'll be like, well, I'll just have the bank do it. I don't want to touch it. So I think that's kind of interesting.
There that is, actually.
Anything else you wanted to bring up today?
I think that's it for now.
If you decide you want to do self-custody, you can get your Ledger or Alipal wallet through our website at www.thebitbytepodcast.com/deals. And then, of course, if you sign up for our newsletter, then you will also get your self-custody checklist, which will help make sure that you're doing it properly. Because transferring your own Bitcoin to your cold storage is kind of terrifying the first time you do it. That's typically a big chunk of change. And it can be a little nerve-wracking. So
just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.